So welcome to those of you who are joining us at 10:10 for Coffee with the Coder, episode 96. We're happy to have you coming along. And those who are here already for the insider portion, you are getting a wonderful education on this fascinating topic. And Paula wasn't quite finished. So Paula, let me let you finish before I bop into the question.
Okay. Well, so I'll just finish up the last couple of things I wanted to say. So category B97.1 is used for viral agents as a cause of disease classified elsewhere with no more specific option for enterovirus D68. B97.19, other enterovirus, is the cause of diseases classified elsewhere. That would be used if it were identified. Now, B97 category is used as a supplementary or additional code to identify infectious agents when it's appropriate, and B97.17 would be used in addition to the infection, not the AFN that we were talking about. For example, acute respiratory infection might be J06.9 with B97.17 secondary if appropriate. Remember, at this point, when AFM is diagnosed, it's typically weeks behind the associated infection. So you're not going to typically see the code for the G04.89 with these codes I've just mentioned. This year, and I wanted to just give you an update, even though, you know, we're saying it could be an outbreak that the CDC is expecting, this year there have been 16 confirmed cases so far, and as of July 31st, and 38 patients that are under investigation. In 2019, there were 46 confirmed cases and 142 under investigation. Since 2014, there have been 633 confirmed cases with increases noted every 2 years due to the virus strains of the enterovirus that are circulating in that year. For example, in 2018, there were 238 cases in 42 states, and in 2019, 49 states, we saw the 42 confirmed cases with 142 under investigation, and they're expecting an uptick in those this year. So that's why they have put everything on their website and started getting it on the news, which is where, you know, I originally heard about it. So anyway, Pam, okay, let's go on to the questions, and thank you for joining us for that insider topic.
Yes. Well, I appreciate you bringing that to our attention, because for some of us, it might not have been on our radar, and it's helpful to stay abreast of all the things that are coming along. And not that we have enough time in the day to do all of that, but yes.
Right.
So I've got a question here that was sent in to Coffee with the Coder as an anonymous question. And I want to start with that one. I would like to mention to the audience, hey, you're welcome to send anonymous questions. The only difference in the way we treat them is we don't say who you are. We need to know who you are so we can reach out to you in case we have a question about your question. But we'd definitely be happy to present it as anonymous if that is best for you. And the other piece of that is that you're not in the running for the mugging. So the mugging is where we have this wonderful, specially designed and branded hot drink mug. So I call it a coffee mug. Christine calls it a tea mug. Whatever it is you want to drink out of it, that's your business. Or if you want it as a decoration, but it's got delightful branding on it, talking about smart revenue. And we will give one of those free, and we call that a mugging because we're sending you a mug. And all the non-anonymous questions go into a pool, and I do pick one out every week that we're having an episode. Now, all that said, let me get over here to this question. It appears it might be inpatient rehab, okay? So a patient is admitted, and the etiologic diagnosis is documented as status post. For example, status post lumbar fusion, status post TKA, status post acute respiratory failure. Sometimes the wording is might say admitted following whatever this is. The diagnosis for, say, the fusion or TKA or the current deficit following the respiratory failure is not documented. According to ICD-10-CM and PCS Coding Handbook, Chapter 11, codes representing patient history, status, or problems, and then she shows a picture from that, Chapter 11, Z codes and external causes of morbidity codes representing status, history, or problems, okay? A diagnostic statement expressed as status post typically refers to an earlier surgery, injury, or illness and usually has no significance for the episode of care. No code for the condition is assigned. So now she returns and says, can you provide some references or guidance to provide to the providers so we can tell our providers as to why status post, whatever it is, will not suffice as the etiologic, they need an explanation other than mine as to why the disease process or deficit following resolution of an acute process needs to be documented. Thank you.
Okay. So, hey, I realize I'm preaching to the choir here, okay? But this is what, you know, because we always grab a hold of words and things. This is what I would go for the answer to that. Now, while status post procedure may be relevant to the encounter, it does not provide the underlying cause of the impairment, which is required for the IRF etiologic diagnosis coding. Now, status post, as you know, does not tell us what the deficit is or what caused the deficit that resulted in the need for rehab. So, yes, the patient had a procedure, but why? Now, here's where I go with what I was saying. The CMS IRF-PI manual says, and this is in relation to what's being entered in the etiologic diagnosis field, enter the ICD code or codes to indicate the etiologic problem that led to the impairment for which the patient is receiving rehab. The etiologic problem is a diagnosis, not a status. That part, that sentence I added. The manual also lists diagnosis codes that are common with specific impairment groups, and there is no status post, no history of, and no here for rehab post-surgery codes in that list. So it is the problem that caused the need for surgery, not the surgery itself that typically caused, you know, the need for rehab. If it was a surgical complication causing the need for rehab, the specific complication should be stated and, of course, associated to those deficits. So I would go back to the IRF-PI manual and grab that statement that says enter the diagnosis codes to indicate the etiologic problem that led to the impairment. And having a surgery is not a problem, okay? So having a surgery is a status of an event that happened. Having what caused the need for that surgery, or post the surgery, what caused the need for rehab. So that's the way I would describe that.
Thank you. Okay, so this one we're going over to a hospital. Our friend Scarlett is sending us a question. It's very specific to this, so I hope I say these words right. You can correct me if I'm not. The hysteroscope inserted visualizing multiple endometrial polyps, which were removed with MyoSure device. Then a DNC performed and specimen sent to pathology, and she gives the code of 58558. NovaSure device was then placed and deployed for 39 seconds burn time, which is 58353 or 58563. After the device complete, the hysteroscope removed from the uterine cavity. Then the hysteroscope reintroduced and a good char noted. Procedure ended. Physician has told us before that NovaSure was a device that wasn't used through the hysteroscope, but it seems like it was in this case. When trying to code this account, we get an edit that only the ablation code should be used. We're concerned it may not capture the MyoSure polypectomy. This has caused an ongoing confusion for us. Can you explain the rationale in getting the correct code?
And we pronounce it hysteroscopy.
Okay, thank you. thank you.
All right. Yeah, so actually, Charlotte has gotten this answer, so we're gonna go through and tell you what we told her. So first, we agree 58558 is bundled into 58563, and these are CPT codes, and 58353. I have to say it slowly so I don't get dyslexic on it, per NCCI, and there is no modifier allowed. But it does feel like you should report both to capture both the ablation and the polypectomy in the lining of the uterus or the endometrium, right? You know, that was just a question. If so, the reason for the bundle edit is likely due to the fact that when the physician is in the uterus and an ablation is performed, performance of a polypectomy is considered like a drive-by. And this is my words. This is not anything I read. It's my words. I liken it to 58558 being the parent code, and like in many other codes with a parent-child code option, the parent code is typically the least service in the code set. Sometimes, but not in this case, a separate procedure. So let's go on. 58558 says hysteroscopy surgical with sampling biopsy of endometrium and or polypectomy with or without DNC. The code is selected without regard to the technique used to remove the polyp in the endometrium or the lining of the uterus. 58563, hysteroscopy surgical with endometrial ablation, and it's got in parentheses, e.g., endometrial resection, electrosurgical ablation, thermoablation. With this code, the physician is surgically removing the lining of the uterus. The work to perform the polypectomy, really, it kind of appears unnecessary as the endometrium is ablated. The work for both procedures is in the same place. It would be like doing a biopsy and an excision or destruction of the same lesion. CCI rules say that we are to report the most extensive procedure. And if you actually watch a video of how these procedures are performed, you see they stick a probe up in the uterus and it fills up. It kind of opens up like a fan and fills up the entire uterus, and then that's when they turn that onto a blade. So it's like it would have automatically destructed the polyp. So just to clarify, 58563 is used per ACOG if any portion of the procedure is done with the hysteroscopy. Since the polypectomy, the 58558 portion was done with the scope and it's bundled into 58563, even if the NovaSure ablation itself was not performed through the scope. The code 58563 is used. And that's hysteroscopy, polypectomy, sampling, DNC, and ablation, all included in this one. So you are actually capturing the entire procedure. And then I gave some links to some videos on YouTube and at NovaSure.com. And if you guys are interested in that, you can email us or post on Facebook, and I'll post those for you, or Pam can post them with this episode. So these appear to indicate the procedure does not need the hysteroscopy, no scope visualization. That is why the scope is reinserted later to evaluate what was done, because what happened in the cases is they go in, they ablate, they pull it back out, and then they put the scope back in to see what's going on. I think that the physician documentation may be incorrect here, you know, so as to what was done with and without the scope. So you might want to query. That said, if the scope is not used during the procedure, why would CPT have a code for with hysteroscopy? And it is true that the scope is not used during the ablation procedure, as the physician originally indicated. So if any portion of the procedure is done with a scope, then including other bundle procedures, it is billed as though it's done through the scope. And there's also a link to a document that Aetna publishes, which gives some pretty clear information as well. So I hope I answered that question clearly. If anybody has any questions, of course, we can respond to that as well. So, Pam?
Thank you. Thank you. Oh, that is wonderful. So now, do I have time for one more?
Yeah, sure. Take a few seconds.
And this is a very, very, it looks to be a very short one. It's from an inpatient rehab, and they want to know if you can code from the pre-admission screen.
Okay, so yeah, technically, I love this question. Technically, yes, if it is validated by the physician, but be careful. Best practice warrants that the physician documentation, that the physician document all the salient parts of the information that's included in the pre-admission screen in his or her H&P or post-admission physician evaluation document. Often, we might see greater detail in the pre-admission screen than the physician has stated elsewhere in the record, and in that situation, I would report that greater specificity if it didn't conflict with anything else in the record. The pre-admission screen, however, is created a few days before admission, and some of those, or could be created up to a few days before admission, and some of those conditions stated may be resolved at the point of the admission to the IRF, so best practice warrants that the physician, of course, validate in his or her documentation in the H&P or post-admission physician evaluation. Now, the pre-screen could, however, cue you to query if information is not clear or conflicts elsewhere. So I always start there when I'm auditing records. I start with the pre-admission screen and I read because I like to get a picture of everything and then go into the H&P. And, you know, there's quite a few times that the pre-admission screen has information that's not included in the record elsewhere. So depending on what that information is as to whether I would choose to, you know, do a query, or, you know, maybe there's clinical evidence in the record, the physician's not staying it, again, that's when you need a query. But I would use it, but I would not code directly from it, because it could happen, the timing of when it could happen. Let me just say it that way. But it could technically be used because the physician signs off on it. So that's just kind of how I would be leery. There you go, Pam.
Thank you, thank you. Okay, so I want to invite you all, so 2 weeks from today on the 24th, to episode 97. I also want to invite you to send in more questions. Have your friends send in questions because I'm working on a goal here, okay? I want to see how many are similar, how many are different. I just wanted to invite a great amount of questions from the audience. Not that they'll all be addressed, of course, because we only have a few minutes every other Monday, but it would be helpful to the auditors as they determine the direction for our pre-call and all of that other stuff. Okay, so then I have one more thing. I'm going to mug someone. And if you were listening closely, you'll know only one question had a name on it. So congratulations, Scarlett. You're going to get a mug for your collection. I think this is probably number three. Another good reason to put your name on when you send in a question, because you just might be the winner that time. Thank you all for joining us. We are so pleased to have you with us on Coffee with the Coder. Share it with your friends. Share it with your colleagues. See you next time.